yourself high five.
Episode 37 of the Gruick Report podcast, the podcast that tells it like it is. I am Steve Gruick, the webmaster of www.gerweck.net, Gruick.net, your source on the World Wide Web, for all your pro wrestling news and information since 1997. And I'm here with my longtime tag team partner, Frank D. How you doing today, Frank D?
I'm doing good, Steve. How about yourself, man?
I'm doing really well, and we're looking forward to another edition of the podcast. And we've got, as usual, a lot of topics to discuss. And I guess maybe the headline of the last news cycle, since we did our last podcast on Tuesday of last week, is that Hulk Hogan and Jimmy Hart went to Japan as WWE officially assigned Kenta, a former GHC heavyweight champion, a former champion of Japan, and a huge international name. Now the question is, what will he be in WWE? How does that translate to a WWE environment? How will the universe react to him? And it starts off by Kenta going to NXT, where he, of course, will learn the WWE ring style. Frank, the track record of WWE bringing in international stars is really not that good. We know Mystico came in as Sin Cara. We've seen AAA guys come in at 1997 Royal Rumble. We, of course, remember Kai and Tai, Taka Michinoku, Dick Togo, etc. And, Frank, the track record of WWE booking and utilizing international talent has not been all that strong. So what are we to make of Kenta coming in? Do you kind of see Kenta really clicking with the universe?
Time will tell. I mean, WWE's track record, as you just stated, as far as international talent, it's not that good. You know, you mentioned Kai and Tai there. You mentioned the AAA guys they had back in 1987. Just recently, they had Yoshitatsu. The only guy that I can ever remember WWE booking, you know, okay, he had a pretty good run there at WWE, was Tajiri. And I thought Tajiri, the guy, was really, really good. And if I can remember a guy who, another guy that they actually had that was okay, I mean, he had some pretty good matches with Bret Hart back in the day, that would be Hakushi, if you remember that one.
Right.
So those are the only two that come to mind. I mean, Kai and Tai, Taka Michinoku, Funaki, all these other guys, you know, those are pretty much comedy acts that never went, you know, went that far, although they did have a pretty good run in 2001 with the voiceover deal they had going on. But as far as Kenta goes, everybody's excited about his signing and him heading over to the whip. But people got to realize, this is a company that does not have a good track record with Japanese talent. So what makes you think that they're going to do anything different with Kenta? It's a good thing that they're going to send him down to NXT first, let him learn the WWE ring style, so they don't have a situation where they have a guy like, say, Mystico, who bypassed developmental completely. And then he came up, and he was the botch king. We don't want to have that situation with Kenta. They, you know, they want Kenta to be a success. So I have no problem with them sending him to NXT first before they move him to the main roster. And the problem, Steve, is going to come into play is that the guy may not speak English. And you and I were talking offline about, well, maybe Kenta can have a mouthpiece. And the mouthpiece would obviously be Paul Heyman.
Especially consider they don't really have wrestling managers anymore.
No, they don't.
So... yeah, he would be the likely candidate to become his mouthpiece. And as you said, if he doesn't speak English, we are in an environment where you must be a strong talker or have somebody talk for you. And if he has trouble with the English language, or I don't know, maybe part of going to NXT will be to learn some English language as well before they bring him on to the big stage. Now, something I thought about, Frank, is how would I use Kenta? You know, if I was booking, how would I use him? And I thought of at least introducing him as a very top international superstar, going over a lot of his matches, a lot of the titles that he won. Maybe do 6-week vignettes of, you know, this guy's coming, Kenta, and show the Japanese flag and show some of his highlights. He's got a lot of great maneuvers, and I would really build him up as something special because I definitely think WWE needs a new talent, a new top talent in that mix. You know, we talked about Kane is in that top mix by default. Randy Orton is very stale. John Cena is John Cena. And they really could use an international flavor to their WWE roster right now. So, you know, why not build this guy up? And I don't want to see him fall to the wayside like a Funaki or a Taka Michinoku because this guy does have talent. This guy is a very good worker. He's a very good wrestler. So if you signed him and you made a big hubbub of this, and you sent Hulk Hogan over there and Jimmy Hart and Triple H is at the press conference and everything, let's use him. Let's utilize his skills. Let's not waste our time here. And to me, Frank, if the guy is signing with WWE, he's already an established star in Japan, he must think there's something here in WWE that he can do, or they've sold him on some idea or somebody he's going to work with when he gets to WWE. Because otherwise, you know, why come? Why don't you just stay in Japan where you are already a huge star? So I hope they do have some sort of plan for him so they can utilize him on the big stage. And as I said, Frank, I hope he doesn't fall by the wayside and become a comedy act in WWE.
Well, here's the thing about that. The Japanese wrestling isn't what it used to be back in the day. And there's only so many opportunities for so many people. I think Kenta realizes that he can make a lot of money in WWE as far as merchandising. And then on top of that, you're working for the number one sports entertainment wrestling company in the world. Everybody who's in the wrestling business, whether you are in WWE or in TNA, or whether you are in Ring of Honor, or whether you are on the indies, you want to be in WWE. That's your goal. If that's not your goal, then you shouldn't be in the wrestling business. Bottom line. I mean, back in the day, it was, you know, if you're a wrestler, you want to be either in WCW or WWE, because that's where you're going to make money. And I think the situation with Kenta is that, you know, he can make a lot of money, and he could possibly have that match one day with a John Cena or something. You know, and one move that Kenta, you know, created, and I don't know, Steve, if they're even going to let him use it in WWE. You know, he is the creator of the go to sleep. So
right. That's right.
I'm kind of wondering if they would even allow him to use that move in WWE. For some reason, I don't think it's going to happen. Because that's a, you know, CM Punk is a guy who's been, you know, he stole the move from Kitchen. I don't know if they're going to let him go with that one or not.
Well, somebody who could be a strong ally to Kenta would be a guy who you are high on in terms of the future of WWE, and that would be Triple H. Triple H obviously is a wrestling fan. We know that. He's a big Ric Flair fan, etc. And to me, if he's going to have more influence in WWE, perhaps, you know, maybe they'll find a spot for Kenta. You know, I keep thinking of all the international stars that they brought in and it just didn't work out. And, you know, maybe Kenta will be the exception. He is a very talented worker. He's going to go to NXT, as you said, you know, and train and learn the WWE style. And I don't know, Frank, times are different. You know, when they brought in a lot of the international stars previously, they had a pretty deep roster.
Right.
Or the roster was better than it was today. Today, Frank, in 2014, we've talked about how poor the WWE roster is. It really lacks depth. And if I can add a guy like Kenta and it can click with fans, I'm going to book him strong. And maybe, perhaps with Triple H's influence, maybe he will get a top spot in WWE.
I think he will. I honestly think he will. You know, it's either going to be, I mean, who Cena's next big challenge is going to come from either two people. It's going to come from Rusev, or it could come from Kenta. But either way it goes, it's going to be one of these two guys. And, you know, if it's, I mean, I can already see the promos now if Paul Heyman is this guy's advocate, quote unquote. It'll be great TV because you have a guy in Paul Heyman who can make a guy look like $1 million who's not good on the mic. I mean, look what he's done for Brock Lesnar. So if they have a situation where Kenta is managed by Paul Heyman, and I think that Triple H sees this guy as a main eventer, he's going to go to the main event level real fast. Steve, the bottom line is that he's got to bypass that Intercontinental Championship. That belt is the career killer. It does nothing for you. And I'm really surprised, you know, there's rumors going around that Cesaro might win that belt. I think that's a mistake if that happened. But, you know, if they have Kenta out there and Kenta comes in and he immediately goes for Cena, I think that would be some pretty good TV.
Well, we're going to talk about Battleground here in a few. We'll get into the card, but looking at the Intercontinental situation with that Battle Royal, Cesaro might win by default. Who else is going to give it to? The Great Khali? I don't know. Dolph Ziggler? I mean, that's the situation you are with that roster. I mean, you're looking at this Intercontinental Battle Royal, and it's got a lot of jabronis in it right now. Alberto Del Rio? There's another international star for you. Alberto Del Rio.
Yeah. And
people might say, hey, he won the World Heavyweight Championship, but as you said, the guy has really never been over, and I don't think fans really take him seriously.
Well, here's a guy, Alberto Del Rio, who was pretty much pushed down your throat. You know, the thing about it is that when somebody is not, if it's not organic and it doesn't happen naturally, they're pushed down your throat. The deal happening right now with Roman Reigns is something natural. It's been something that's been organically there for months. People wanted to see him split away from the Shield months ago, and that's the reason why the guy is so over. And they're all having success in their own way. Alberto Del Rio is a guy, I mean, honestly, Steve, I would have probably cut the guy off the roster a year ago. He's just not over. People don't care about Alberto Del Rio. They just don't care. He was, they said backstage he was miserable, and he was mad and about the lack of push. He's not going to get back to the heavyweight championship. That's not going to ever happen. That's a done deal. Just like The Miz ever getting back to that level. It's a done deal. It ain't going to happen. You know, they tried that experiment with The Miz. Didn't work. It just didn't work. I mean, you couldn't take him, the guy from the real world, you couldn't take him as a WWE champion. Couldn't do it.
That's just frustrating when you're a top star, as you are in Mexico, like Del Rio or Mystico, who came in as Sin Cara, and then you get on the WWE roster and that you're, even as the World Heavyweight Champion, you're not taking seriously.
Well, the World Heavyweight Championship, I mean, in all fairness, and I'm a big advocate for the big gold belt, but the big gold belt hasn't really meant anything in WWE for the last few years. And now it's probably just one title. It's probably just one championship, and it still doesn't mean anything. So it's like, really, to excel at that company, you have to be WWE champion. And Alberto, you know, at one point, he was a WWE champion, but even as a WWE champion, nobody cared. I mean, the guy, he can't cut a good promo either. It's a broken English kind of situation. But, yeah, he's a good hand, but he's boring. You've seen that act already. It's done. They want to bring him in as a Mexican aristocrat, the Mexican JBL. It didn't work. You know, I mean, it was cool to see him come out every week with the different cars. That was fine. You know, then they had Ricardo Rodriguez, that Eddie Munster looking dude. That was okay. But now, what is he offer? I mean, it was pretty obvious when Dolph Ziggler came out and cashed in Money in the Bank on Alberto Del Rio, and Del Rio was a babyface. It really shows you how much the fans really cared about Del Rio when they turned on him.
And, of course, today is, as I said up the top of the podcast, is 7/14/14. And I think it was right after we did the podcast last Tuesday, there was a image of Sting on his Twitter with 7/14/14. So a tease that, you know, Sting might finally be coming to WWE television. We found out as of this morning, according to Dave Meltzer, that he still had not signed a deal with WWE. So the speculation tonight is that Sting would probably appear on WWE television in a taped or pre-recorded promo to either hype he'll be a part of the WWE video game coming up in 2015, or he will be in the new DVD set coming out, the Ultimate Collection. But I don't think you're going to see Sting on television tonight. And the real, you know, the real question is, will we ever see Sting on WWE television?
I think they're, you know, honestly, they're missing the boat with Sting. I really do. I think they're really dropping the ball with Sting. Sting, you know, people can like Sting or they don't like Sting. Sting is one of the biggest names in the history of the wrestling business, big time. And to me, he's kind of getting that jabroni treatment right now for some reason. I mean, a Legends deal, really, for Sting? I don't know.
You know, either way, Frank, we were talking about this offline. Yeah. We've been talking about Sting for 6 months now.
Right.
And here we are in the middle of July. Nothing's coming to fruition. There's no talk of him coming back and working in the ring, doing the Undertaker match. You know, maybe for WrestleMania next year, who knows. But, you know, as time goes on, Frank, it looks to me less and less that you're going to see Sting actually wrestle. And perhaps 2015 you'll see Sting get in the WWE Hall of Fame, as he's been rumored, as a name mentioned. But I think you got to realize, I think we may have seen the last of Sting in the ring as a in-ring performer.
Yeah, to be honest with you, see, I don't really want to see Sting in a ring as an in-ring performer. I think that Sting, you know, in the role of a counter to maybe the Authority, if you were to go to him being like maybe a general manager or something like that, I think that would work, that would suit him fine. In the occasional cameo of him going out, maybe doing the Scorpion Death Drop or Scorpion Deathlock or something like that on somebody, I think that works fine. But Sting is a lot older now, so I think his in-ring career is pretty much done. I think that something may—I honestly think that maybe them ending the streak may have soured him on signing that contract, because he said, you know, the sheet said that he, you know, was interested in wanting to do the match with Taker. You know, he would even go to, you know, out there to Houston and actually practice a match until they got it right to do it. You know, so there's something here with Sting that's making him not really sign that contract, and only he knows and his people know what that is.
Well, Undertaker losing the streak definitely takes away some of the luster of a potential Undertaker-Sting match. But in 2014, it's one of the few things we've yet to see in wrestling. And I think done right, they still could do Sting versus Undertaker as a huge match. It's just the question, does Sting really want to do it? And then the other question now would be, you know, where is Undertaker? We're hearing that he's really banged up. And, of course, he's only going to do one match a year. So he can be banged up here in July and be ready to wrestle in April. But I just think it's getting to be looking more and less likely that you're going to see that. And I'm really starting to really think that, you know, Sting is done, and I think we have to come to some reality that maybe The Undertaker could be done as well. I mean, I know this is not the way he'd want to go out, but, you know, sometimes your body dictates you're done. To me, Undertaker is a guy, if he can't perform at a certain level, he's probably not going to do it. If he doesn't think he can put on an Undertaker WrestleMania-type performance, you know, Frank, he could be done as well. So that dream match could, I mean, they both could be done at this point. We just don't know.
Well, you know, the difference between the two guys is I think that Undertaker is probably a lot more banged up than Sting is right now.
Yes, I agree with that.
I think if Sting got in the gym and Sting worked pretty hard and got himself in some type of a condition where he didn't have to wear a shirt, and he could do it. I think Sting can go out there and have one more match, one final match, that stamps puts a legacy on his career. And that match doesn't necessarily have to be with The Undertaker. It could be with somebody else. It could be with a John Cena. It could be with a Bray Wyatt. It could be with a Triple H. You know, it could be with anybody else. I think if he did a match with Triple H, just being a worker, Triple H, and I think Triple H can carry Sting to a good match.
No, I definitely agree with that.
I think that would be a draw.
I guess one of the things you'd run into if you brought Sting out live on a WWE television show right now is fans would probably chant one more match.
Well, yeah.
So remember what happened to Ultimate Warrior? They were chanting one more match for him, and I think if Sting comes back, even if he goes to the Hall of Fame in 2015 without wrestling, no, fans are going to clamor for one more match.
And,
so,
and people get on an age thing, Steve. And I'm really tired of people talking about Sting's age. And the reason why I say that, you got 75-year-old Ric Flair out there. you got 85-year-old Hulk Hogan out there, and
he doesn't wrestle.
Yeah, but in 2002, okay, when Hogan was 70, he was out there wrestling.
True.
So what's the rag here on Sting? Oh, well, Sting wears a T-shirt. Dude, when was the last time you saw Mr. McMahon's physique? You know what I mean?
Maybe Sting can come back for The Rock. Hulk Hogan came back for The Rock.
I think any type of match you put Sting in, honestly, would be a big draw.
Absolutely.
Because this is what the ignorant wrestling fans that talk crap don't understand about Sting. This is a guy who has never, ever wrestled in a WWE ring. That means that if the old guard WCW fans hear about this, they're going to go clamoring to see this guy because they know it might be only one time. That's the point. Here's a guy who's never wrestled in their ring, who's never been on their show. Look how much fanfare he got when they saw him appear on the Ultimate Legends DVD. Or the documentary on the network. When he was on that, he was on something that happened before that where after Warrior had passed, he did a video on Cincinnati and they played it. Do you mean to tell me people really honestly are that stupid enough to believe that Sting isn't a big deal in wrestling? Sting is a very big deal in wrestling. Sting is a very big deal in WWE. If people are that ignorant to believe that, then you can go and be ignorant and be under that rock if you want.
I was just thinking, how many people on the current WWE roster has Sting worked with, had a match with, other than Kane?
Nobody.
Nobody. Not Randy Orton, not nope. John Cena, not Triple H.
When Randy Orton had the Legend Killer gimmick, right? Wouldn't that, right. I mean, Sting versus Orton, trying to kill the Legend of Sting. Huge.
Yep.
John Cena. Now. Versus, you know, Sting. If Sting were to come back and maybe Sting was a heel or something, that would be a draw.
Sting versus CM Punk. Sting versus Daniel Bryan.
Anybody would be a draw.
Anybody. Any of the guys in WWE because he doesn't work with any
exactly.
of these people.
Age,
never.
Doesn't matter what age the guy is. If that mattered, if that honestly mattered, then they never would have had Ric Flair out there wrestling for as long as they did. They never would have had Ric Flair as the IC champion. That age thing doesn't matter to me. It's just stupid.
Sting is one of the biggest names in the history of the business. Still is in 2014. People still want to see Sting. I mean, look at all the hubbub about this guy. I mean, if the guy's washed up, why is there such a big hubbub about him? Everybody's talking about the internet's buzzing that, you know, 7/14/14, he might show up tonight on Raw.
Yep.
So fans still want to see this guy. Even at, what is he now, 50-some years old? 53, 54? Right. People still want to see this guy because he's a star.
Yep.
And I think it really speaks to where we are in 2014 is there's just not a lot of stars in wrestling.
Exactly.
So when a huge star like Sting is around, he really means something.
I mean, give it a rest. Give it a rest, man. I mean, you know what? Hey, if all these guys were that big of a deal, then we would not be talking about Sting right now.
We'd have better than a 2.9 rating.
Exactly, if that's the case. Why is somebody from the past about a company that a lot of people don't even know about, WCW, the newer fans don't know anything about it unless they have a network, why do they give a damn? I mean, imagine the sales that would happen if they were to put out the Sting face mask, a new Sting Scorpion T-shirt or something like that. It'd be huge, man.
If WWE is so over, why are they having trouble with the network right now?
Right.
Why are they cutting the budget? In fact, we're gonna talk about the network here in just a minute, but I want to talk a little bit about Battleground because, believe it or not, Frank, there is a pay-per-view this weekend.
Oh, I'm aware.
We were talking about the vacant IC championship. Now, here's the guys. You were talking about Cesaro possibly getting it. Now, here are the guys that, as of today, and it obviously will change probably after Raw, they've announced so far for the Battle Royal, for the IC Championship, you've got Alberto Del Rio, Big E, Bo Dallas, Cesaro, Curtis Axel, Damian Sandow, Dolph Ziggler, Fandango, Kofi Kingston, RVD, Ryback, Sheamus, and the Great Khali, with a additional guy to be announced. Frank, this is a this is a very weak IC battle royal. I mean, the talent here is either so far down the ladder, or they've just been misused, so many of these guys. I mean, Damian Sandow definitely could be a bigger star than he is now. We know about Dolph Ziggler, etc. But, Frank, if you're booking this match, who are you going to give the IC championship to on Sunday night?
This is like the jabroni battle royal.
Somebody's going to win by default.
Yeah. This is not good because a lot of these guys don't mean anything.
This really exposes how there is nobody even close to being an Intercontinental Championship material. And this is at a time when the IC Championship means virtually nothing.
The belt doesn't mean anything. And the obvious guy would be Cesaro.
He's the hottest guy in the mix.
Yeah, but that music is terrible. You know, I don't get it, man. He was out there, you know, at Mania, and he did the deal with Swagger, and he had the real American music that he had, and it's just, for some reason to me, since he became a Paul Heyman guy, the momentum has just been not there anymore. Something about this combination doesn't work for me, and
it's kind of like air out of a basketball. The basketball was growing,
yeah,
and now you let some air out of the basketball again.
And I think it's because Heyman is just too much of a heel. And Cesaro, the people wanted Cesaro to be a babyface. Cesaro isn't getting those crazy reactions he was getting before. He hasn't been getting that lately. And I think a lot of that is due to Paul Heyman. You know, when Paul Heyman starts the promo off and says, you know, his client Brock Lesnar ended the streak, and then you bring out Cesaro after that, well, that's going to be heat. It's like, who else are you giving to in this match besides a Cesaro? Well, there's a Dolph Ziggler. What is Dolph Ziggler going to do with the Intercontinental belt? He'll win it, and then they're going to job him out the next night.
Right. It would do him more harm to win it than it doesn't.
It does.
Why not win?
Honestly, Steve, this belt does more harm now than it does good.
I agree.
Because if they put this belt on Cesaro, it's a kiss of death. You know, he puts the belt on, he's going to get hurt.
We've watched a lot of battle royals over the year, and it's something I was talking to you offline. If Great Khali is in this match, and the guy can barely walk to the ring, you may need a forklift to take him to the ring.
Right.
But if he gets in the ring, and the bell rings, all he really needs to do is fall down, go into one of the corners, wrap his arms around the ropes, and to me, the guy couldn't lose. Because it would take most of the roster to get him out of the ring.
Sure.
So I don't know. I know they're not thinking this way. I'm just, with Great Khali being in the physical shape that he's in right now, I don't know. I'll throw it out to the listeners. Do you ever remember somebody in a battle royal, maybe somebody was injured or something, just try to stay on the ground? I mean, why fight? Let everybody else fight, and you just go in the corner, and you just sit there. And with the Great Khali, with his weight, just go to a corner and wrap yourself around the ropes and let everybody fight. And don't get me wrong, I'm not endorsing the Great Khali for the IC Championship. I can't believe the guy's still on the roster in 2014, Frank. We've already tried this Great Khali thing. It didn't work. So, I don't know. This really looks like the jabroni battle royal for the IC Championship. I guess if we don't Bo leave in Dallas, you don't go with Bo Dallas right now. Curtis Axel had the title. Damian Sandow's a joke. We tried Fandango. He was hot for about 2 minutes. I can always go back to Kofi Kingston. I guess it's a bit of a surprise, but I don't know, Frank. This really just shows you how weak the roster is right now. And that Cesaro just might win by default, because who else are you going to give it to at this point?
There's no depth in the roster. I mean, you got Big E Langston in there. It's just a bunch of guys that are just, like I said, man, they don't mean anything. They're just a bunch of lower mid-card talent. That's all they are. That nobody gives a damn about. I mean,
they would have been better off to put these guys in a tournament on television again and go down to the final two and have the final two wrestle on the paper. You would have meant more than some guy winning a battle royal with a bunch of jabronis.
I mean, it's not like the same thing like back in the day when you did a battle royal for the IC belt and you had Razor Ramon in it, you know what I'm saying? Had Razor Ramon and Rick Martel have a 5-star classic after the battle royal. You're not going to get that here. So it's really a throwaway situation here, and I mean, you're going to go with Cesaro, pretty much.
Yeah, he, like I said, he might just win by default.
Yeah.
And I agree with you.
I'm not too excited about it, to be honest with you.
Putting it on him doesn't do anything for him.
Nope.
But you just might have to, because who else are you going to give it to in this situation?
Yeah.
But looking at the top of the card, we've got Cena, Kane, Orton, and Roman Reigns, a fatal four-way for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. The only real fresh face here in the mix, of course, is Roman Reigns. And I think a lot of people are excited about Roman Reigns, you know, possibly getting an opportunity to be the WWE champion at some point. But obviously, I think it's too early for him. And not to mention, it seems pretty much a lock that they're going to go with John Cena versus Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. So really, by default, I think John Cena will probably walk out as the heavyweight champion again.
I think he will. Yeah, it's pretty obvious. I mean, if the plan is for him to go up against Brock, we can definitely see that Cena's going to walk out with the belt. Roman Reigns is too early, and they could be possibly going with a Roman Reigns versus Triple H match at SummerSlam. That's been rumored. Or it could be Roman Reigns versus Randy Orton, which I don't see any money in that one.
I don't either.
Kane, I don't know what they're going to do with Kane. This whole Demon Kane thing is just horrible. So I definitely see John Cena winning the WWE, retaining the WWE Championship. Just like I see Cesaro winning the Intercontinental Belt. I think they have Ambrose versus Rollins.
Correct. Which should be a pretty good match.
Should be a pretty good match, and I kind of see maybe Dean Ambrose winning that one, simply because Rollins has Money in the Bank, and they can also always tease he can cash it in. So it doesn't really hurt Rollins to take the fall here in this match, because he has Money in the Bank and he'll be protected. Because he has that Money in the Bank briefcase.
If Seth Rollins does cash in and he wins the championship, then you'd say, well, Dean Ambrose already beat Seth Rollins.
Right.
You always use that logic as well. Now, the undercard, as you're kind of alluding to here, looks stronger than the upper card. We have the Usos against the Wyatt family, which was a great match on the last pay-per-view. That should be really good. 2 out of 3 falls this time for the WWE Championship. We got AJ Lee against Paige. And then a match I think will be really good, also on the undercard, Bray Wyatt versus Chris Jericho. As we talked about before, Chris Jericho does know his role. He comes back and will put Bray Wyatt over and look really strong. In fact, actually, though, in this one, you might see Jericho win and then Wyatt get the bigger win at SummerSlam.
Yeah, I mean, that's the process. That's the formula I would go with. I would just have Jericho beat him. And then Wyatt come back later on at the bigger show and get the win over Jericho.
Right.
The tag team championships, it's time for the Wyatt family to take that.
I would agree. Based on that last match, I would go with the Wyatt family as well.
It's time for the Wyatts to take it. So I'm looking for the Wyatt family and the Usos to have pretty much a classic out there. Possible show sealer match. If not, I mean, you got some pretty strong matches there, really, that can seal that show. You know,
right.
And I'm talking about Ambrose and Rollins. They could do that. And I mean, my God, man, look how over Ambrose is as a babyface. And this guy, you were thinking he was going to be the heel when the Shield broke up. He was going to be the heel, and he's over like a babyface. You know, it's crazy. So they have a pretty good chance of having a winning a 5-star classic out there. So do the tag team championship match. I think that Jericho versus Wyatt, that might be pretty good as well. I mean, it's really, honestly, I have to really see how these two styles go together, how they mesh together, before I can say, oh, they're going to have a classic. But it's going to be pretty strong. I think they're going to have a situation where all the wrestlers here are going to be trying to outdo one another. And Paige versus AJ Lee, if I were them, I'd just keep the belt on AJ. They've already done the Paige experiment, but I do see Paige turning heel at this point. I think they might have Naomi versus Cameron.
That's a possibility. It's not been officially announced. But let me just say this, Frank. I think Bray Wyatt against Jericho, Ambrose against Seth Rollins, and Usos against the Wyatt family, those three matches alone will be worth your $9.99. So people want to say, I don't know, that top match doesn't look that good, and the IC Championship doesn't look all that enticing with a jabroni battle royal, and the women's match ain't gonna do much for me. But I think those three other matches, Frank, should make this show overall a pretty good show.
I mean, if I were booking this, you know, going back to the booking 101, I would have a battle royal, and then I would have the last two people who won the last two people who were in the ring at the end of that battle royal, then proceed to have a match for the vacant IC championship. That's what I would do, because they've already done it before.
Right.
So that's what I would do. I mean, they did that before, and there was a big dude in that battle royal back in the day too, named Giant Gonzalez, who they threw out. You know, and then it got to the last two people were Rick Martel, Razor Ramon, and then Ramon, of course, went over and won the IC belt. I would do something similar to that, where Cesaro and maybe another guy, it could be a Dolph Ziggler and Cesaro at the end, have them two go at it for the IC championship in a one-on-one match. That's what you do.
Right. I like it.
And that's also having another, you also have another match there that could possibly steal the show. And, you know, it's like, yeah, they're really beefing up the card here because they want more subscribers. They got a subscriber count coming up, I believe, on the 31st of this month. So they're putting a lot more emphasis on these pay-per-views. That's the reason why they're giving you all this on Battleground. But the world title match doesn't do anything for me. It's just, Kane is just, man, like, ugh.
And I believe, as going back to the network, I think today's the last day of the free trial.
Yeah, it is. I just got a text message a little while ago telling me that I, Frank D, could, you know, get the network. Today's the last day of the free trial, and I can watch the best of Monday Nitro tonight after Raw.
Rerun.
Yeah. Rerun for me, because I already got a DVD.
Well, isn't it interesting, Frank, after our last podcast where we gave out, I went back and listened to our podcast. We must have gave them like 10 ideas for the network,
right?
What they could do. And one of the things that we were harping on was, you know, get rid of the Raw pre-show and post-show. And isn't it interesting, this week, there is no Raw post-show.
Well, there wasn't one last week either.
Well, maybe they're finally getting the hint that people don't want to see that Raw post-show.
It's a waste of time. You know, we're going to sit around and watch the show talking about kayfabe storylines. Come on, man. How lame is that?
You expect people to watch a half-hour pre-show, a three-hour Raw, and then to sit down and watch a 30-minute post-show?
Right.
I mean, to me, Frank, if they go back to two-hour Raws, the show would be better. But, you know, we're subjected to three-hour Raws week after week after week after week, and then we're supposed to sit through Raw pre-show and Raw post-show and the roundtable discussion, etc. And then we were talking, you know, me and you offline, and something you brought up to me, and something I guess I knew about it, and I wasn't really thinking about it, was the TNA On Demand service, and that in talking about content, TNA's On Demand service actually does have all the TNA pay-per-views, which would include the original Wednesday night two-hour pay-per-views that they started with, the $9.99 pay-per-view. I believe they were $9.99 back in the day. 2002, 2003, that era of TNA. They had all the DVDs that TNA has released available on the on-demand service. And as we're checking it right now, I guess technically it's being taken down or in a transitional phase. But, Frank, they could learn from the TNA on-demand service, something I think you had originally at one time, about producing the content. They had all the DVDs. They had, all of them uncut. And they had all the DVDs available on their on-demand services. It's too bad that TNA really didn't promote that, because they actually had a pretty good service for a time.
Yeah, they did. I actually subscribed to the service, and I can tell you that it was a good service. It was the first of its kind that you can go on a website and another company putting everything that it had in its vault out there for people to see. I think TNA was the hybrid of this, you know, what would be the WWE network. So I give them credit on that, and I think that it's something. If TNA were to come out right now, I'll say this, and I've been very critical of TNA since we've been doing these podcasts, and they were the dead brand and all that stuff. But I'll tell you one thing right now. If TNA were to come up with an app, you know, that can be on the PS3 or on my S5 or whatever, that I could watch TNA's on-demand service, subscribe to whatever for whatever they were charging for it, you know, I subscribe in a heartbeat. Because there's a lot of matches in TNA that were historical for its time. The Ultimate X match, the first Samoa Joe versus Kurt Angle match was good. They had a lot of good stuff in TNA back in the day, as opposed to now. So TNA might want to think about it for a source of revenue, a source of making money. Hey, let's do this on-demand service and do it right.
Do you remember how much it cost back in the day, the on-demand?
Don't quote me, but I think it might have been between $9.99 and maybe $11.99.
Okay, so maybe the pricing was a little too high originally at that time.
Yeah.
But I agree with Frank. If TNA would come out with a Roku channel or a channel you could watch on your smart TV or your smart device, your tablet, your mobile phone, where you can access the TNA video library, where you can check out all the great TNA, great TNA pay-per-views. They at one time, TNA was producing a lot of great pay-per-views. Go back to the day, and you can watch all those pay-per-views, the Wednesday night pay-per-views, the original Impacts on Fox Sports Net, when you could watch the X Division and watch, as you said, the Samoa Joe, Kurt Angle match, all the great cage matches they've had in their era. On one click of a button, I think they have something. I definitely agree with Frank there. And it's too bad that a lot of the fans might even know that they had a TNA on-demand service because they never hyped it. They never talked about it. It's the same situation you run into with their house shows, and they're out in the middle of nowhere. Well, they didn't know about it. Yeah, because they didn't tell anybody. They're running a house show out in Oklahoma or in Kansas or in Tennessee in their backyard. And I think they really missed the boat with this, Frank. As you said, they probably had this service available before the WWE Network was even talked about in 2012. It never caught on, probably because they never really promoted it. But if they could explain that they had every TNA pay-per-view they've ever produced in the vault, along with the old Impacts and the DVD titles that they've produced, to me, they really had something. And, Frank, I think in 2014 they still could make it work, as you said, if they put it out in a format that people can access, tablet, mobile phone, etc. I mean, Frank, they are sitting on a lot of great video footage. We've talked about this before, and in hindsight, talking about, you know, someday that TNA footage is going to end up on the WWE Network. But right now, while they have it, why not use it? And on-demand service would be a great way for people to see a lot of the great TNA matches. I don't know, Frank. I think like that was, to me, that'd be something that should really work.
Yeah, and I'm reading here as you were saying that TNA actually had a app on the Roku device.
Really?
Really, they did, yeah. Yeah, so they actually had something on Roku, but as of last year, they were shutting it down as someone put it, as restructuring of the company. And I think this is all that started when they started doing all the cutbacks, is what happened. It might be something they did starting in. And you know, Steve, honestly, I might be a little off about that price. I think the price for this service maybe might have been
lower than that.
I'm checking right now as we're doing this podcast, so I'm
because I seems like when we would talk about this, you know, way back, it would be less than that, but I don't remember, you know, you quoted me the price at that time. But if it's even, I mean, say $7.99 and you have access to all the TNA pay-per-views and all the Impacts and DVDs, yeah, it'd be well worth it. And I guess if you're a TNA and you've only been around for, what, 12 years, you know, put everything online and people can access it. So, say $8 a month is, what, $100 a year? I think that's what Amazon Prime is, $99 a year. Maybe you can do $99 a year and you can watch every TNA pay-per-view DVD one click away. As I said, Frank, I think WWE could learn. When those old DVDs, were they uncut, uncensored?
Yeah. Yeah, they weren't even touched.
That's great. They might have been ahead of their time and didn't realize it.
I think they were. I mean, like I said, and this is during the time when Jeff Jarrett was in the company. It was just something. It was an idea that they had, and it worked for a little while. And people were talking about, I mean, they were talking about right now as I'm reading the amount of content you got for the low price that they were offering. And they were even talking about, now here's some of the talk on YouTube at the time, Steve, was this. They were talking about, somebody wrote, you know, WWE should come out with its own kind of on-demand service, you know, since WWE has more content than TNA. So people were already thinking back then about a possible WWE network.
Wow. And, of course, you mentioned, you were just talking about Jeff Jarrett, and not much new on the global wrestling front, Global Force Wrestling, but we did find out that WWE has put Jeff Jarrett in their alumni section. Anything to be made of that, Frank?
I mean, I guess if they put you in the alumni, I guess they must be on pretty good terms with you, right?
You would think.
Or is that just Joey Styles saying, hey, put Jeff Jarrett in here to get people talking, like we're doing right now?
That's probably the more likely scenario, is just to get a little bit of a buzz in. And I don't think he got much of a buzz, but I thought it was an interesting name to add to the alumni section. I guess they add somebody every so often, so why not Double J?
Good old Double J and his wrestling boom.
That's right. We're still waiting for.
Right.
Well, maybe we have to wait for Global Force Wrestling to officially launch before you get that boom.
If it ever happens.
Every time I see that logo he posts on Twitter, I'm thinking, okay, where's the meat and potatoes now? Okay, you've got a logo, you got a relationship with New Japan, you're going to work with Hermie Sadler. Okay, show me something now.
Right.
Who are you going to book? Where can I see this? Where are you coming? Et cetera. It seemed like by now they should have something that they could announce that would be some substance at this point, other than a T-shirt.
Yeah,
a T-shirt of a promotion that's never run a show yet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, why am I joining the force?
Well, remember, Jeff Jarrett did the TNA business backwards anyways and putting the pay-per-views up front. I mean, they wanted you to buy something right away before you could even see what it was. So, we have Matt Stryker. I got to mention this because Matt Stryker posted a picture on Twitter where he got some piercings on his face. And basically he said, why not? I'm getting with the times. I'm not on WWE television anymore. Why not? Well, Frank, after I saw that picture, there's a lot of reasons why not.
Yeah, I just want to say right now that apparently Pat Patterson isn't the only one who came out of the closet, as far as that's concerned. I mean, Darren Young was the first to do it in WWE. Supposedly, Pat Patterson did it on Legends House, and now Matt Stryker's done it as well. That's great for him. He wants to come out of the closet. I mean, he has to come out of the closet and saying he's homosexual, because that's the only reason why he would get those piercings like that. I'm just saying.
Well, some people put, in our comment section, he looks like CM Stryker now. Maybe he's going with the CM Punk look.
I don't remember CM Punk having that, all those piercings. From what I understand, CM Punk was pretty much a player backstage. I mean, he was banging all the females.
Well, isn't that what CM stands for? Chick Magnet?
I guess. Chick Magnet, so. Chicago Maid, whatever you want. Whatever you want to say it stands for, it stands for. But,
right.
I mean, seriously, Matt Stryker has to be coming out of the closet as being gay or something, because that's the reason why he has all those piercings like that, looking like a female.
Well, I guess he wasn't worried about going to TNA, because now we're hearing possibly that Josh Matthews could go to TNA.
And I like that.
I like that too.
Josh Matthews says, screw this. You're going to fire me over a budget cut, but you want to keep Overbite. Really? You want to put her on Superstars and we're going to take her all the way up to SmackDown and possibly Raw. The commentary is already bad enough as it is, and they want to put her on there. So I commend Josh Matthews 100% for going down there to the dead brand TNA. And I think if they put him on there and this guy goes to the announcing booth, you might see a 100% contrast in the commentary in TNA. You might get somebody in there who has never been a part of the product, spice it up a little bit.
How about Matthews and Borash as a team to spice up a little bit?
I think that'll work pretty good. I think
be better than
Borash
Tanay
is pretty,
and Chad.
Jeremy Borash is pretty good as an announcer. I mean, he's a guy who really, even when the product was horrible like it is, he's a guy who still went out there and gave it his all.
I totally agree. I mean, it would really freshen up the product with Matthews and Borash versus Tanay and Taz because, I mean, it's been so stale for so long. I think it was interesting, too. I ran a poll on GirlWag.net asking fans, would you like to see Renee Young on Raw or SmackDown? And they're talking about maybe eventually promoting her to one of the big shows. And, Frank, it was 61% positive. I think that just shows you that people are so tired and stale of what they're giving to on Raw and SmackDown is, let's throw a girl on there, maybe liven it up a little bit.
Yeah, our people are just thinking one body part, and that's pretty much why they voted yes.
Well, you know, that's interesting. You talk about body parts here, because coming up very soon at GirlWick.net, we're going to do the hottest 100 divas in the history of professional wrestling. We've done a Hot 100 in 2012 where I assembled a crew to come up with the hottest 100 divas. And then last year we did the tournament that Mickey James won. And in 2014, we're going to do the hottest divas, the top 100 hottest divas. Fans will vote. We're going to open up to the fans. And Frank D, just real quickly, when you're thinking about the hottest divas of all time in professional wrestling, who are some of the names that come to mind?
Top of my list right now, Stephanie McMahon.
Two reasons?
Could be two reasons, could be three. I don't know. But Stephanie comes to the list. Miss Elizabeth, God rest her soul, comes to my list. Sensational Sherry comes to my list.
Rest in peace.
Absolutely. Nancy Benoit is another one comes to my list. Tori Wilson.
Trish Stratus?
Yeah, Trish Stratus, Tori Wilson. Joy Giovanni.
The girl with the long legs?
She can be on your list. I don't really care.
Stacey Keibler.
Yeah, and on top of that, Stacey Keibler is, you know, George Clooney's used product at this point. So.
Well, you got to remember, with this particular tournament, we're doing them in their primes.
Okay. In their prime,
like,
right?
Sunny. I mean, certainly
never
today, 2014.
Never was a fan of Sunny.
2014, you wouldn't say Sonny's the hottest diva in wrestling.
No,
all
but
the time.
I would say
but
that.
But back to 96, 97, well.
I wouldn't say that. It just wasn't my cup of tea. I never got into it. I didn't have any sunny days like Bret Hart did. You know what I'm saying? So it just wasn't for me.
You were one of the few that didn't have some sunny days.
Yeah, I didn't get into her. I just really didn't think so. I mean, no.
We'll just throw out some other names. How about Sable? She's, of course, came out with the handprints at, what, Fully Loaded, was it 98?
Yeah, I never really got into Sable either.
No? Kelly?
She's all right in the face.
Well, I know, here's one you like, I know. Eve Torres.
Eve is at the top of the list, yeah. Eve, yeah, absolutely.
Crystal Marshall.
Hey. So much I had my kid, I'd pay child support.
Desire, of course, Kim Nielsen in
TNA.
Yeah,
Desire was hot back in the day. I saw her in 2002 in TNA. It's very hot.
And a name here that I think maybe not a lot of people know it unless they actually watch NXT, but she's actually married to Cody Rhodes. That is what, Brandi Rhodes? Eden? I think her name in NXT?
Yep.
Very pretty woman.
Absolutely.
And I think she'll definitely be in our tournament.
Very pretty woman, and obviously she's with Cody Rhodes because she likes men with lisp.
Got some other names I'm just throwing out. We got Terry Runnels, Lacey Von Erich.
Oh, Candace man, McMahon. Lacey Von Erich, another one at the top of my list.
Woof.
Yeah.
Jacqueline,
hey,
back in the day.
Jacqueline has two big reasons why I'm a fan of hers.
Gail Kim, who did really well in last year's tournament, she'll be in the
tournament.
Hey,
you know what? Out of respect to Chef Robert Irvine, who I'm a fan of, and Restaurant Impossible, I'm going to leave that one alone.
You got The Miz's wife, Maryse, Christy Hemme, Velvet Sky, some of the other names that's down my list here. Cheerleader Melissa's in this tournament. Maria Canales, who's looking really fine these days in ROH.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she came out there with that Best of the World pay-per-view wearing practically nothing. Wow.
And then I guess, you know, being this is all time, and a lot of these girls, you can probably go back to the WWE Network and find them. Somebody like Precious that was with Jimmy Garvin back in the day. I believe they're still married today. Yeah. DX Tori. Remember Tori from DX?
Yeah, Tori wasn't. Yeah, Tori was like Summer Rae right now. You know, had a pretty good body, but not really all that in the face.
Right. The Cat, Stacy Carter, who actually took her top off in a WWE pay-per-view.
Hey, you know what? out of respect to Jerry Lawler, we're just not going to talk about that one. I know it's that's the reason why he got fired the first time.
That's true.
Over a woman.
That's right. And that was the woman.
That was the woman.
Yep. Baby Doll, of course, was with Tully Blanchard from back in the day.
Yeah, but I remember she was on my list.
Yep. Missy Hyatt, one of the first women of wrestling. I think she used that moniker.
Who hasn't been? you know, I was going to say who hasn't been through Missy Hyatt, but, you know.
Some of the other names I'm looking through the past here. We got a couple Nitro girls.
Oh, yeah.
I think people really forget how beautiful some of those Nitro girls really were from. Not only were they dancing, but, boy, they just were spectacular to look at. You had Nitro Girl Spice. You had Nitro Girl Fire. And, of course, the one that ended up with Diamond Dallas Page, who, of course, had an on-air role, was Kimberly Page, who did Playboy and the 40-Year-Old Virgin as well in the movie. So
I think she popped out in that movie.
I think she did.
Yep.
So we're going to talk about more names as the tournament gets a little bit closer. Dark Journey is a name from the past as well that will be in the tournament. So, again, I think a lot of these names you can go back and watch the WWE Network. Oh, I know one that I wanted to mention is now currently with Ric Flair, was in WCW. Fifi.
Fifi.
Remember Fifi?
Yeah, I remember Fifi. And Fifi does, I mean, come on, dude. Really? I mean, really with Ric Flair, who these days is looking like Hulk Hogan by the head. Ric Flair. I mean, come on. I am just so tired of Ric Flair. I'm just so sick and tired of Ric Flair with that woo and all that dumb stupid. I mean, really?
And then we saw what, at Madison Square Garden? He actually busted open Bray Wyatt.
Exactly. And also, I also want to say here, too, that no disrespect intended at all, but, hey, Awesome Kong, Karma, and God Rest His Soul, Birth of Faye won't be on this list.
No. Now, if we're doing the top 100 women wrestlers, for sure they would be on the list.
Absolutely.
We're talking about
females that we'd actually would screw. So, sorry, you ain't going to be on the list.
Yeah, you know, rest in peace, Mae Young, Fabulous Moolah. But I think when you talk about the 100 hottest divas and women in wrestling, I don't think those names pop in your head.
I've seen pictures of Mae Young way back when she was younger. You know. But
unless you're Mark Henry, maybe. I don't know.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah.
So we'll talk about more names. I think a couple of weeks we'll start the tournament. We're gonna find out who the fans out there think is the hottest diva of all time. And as you said, you know, we went down the list and some of the girls that you really liked and some of the girls you didn't really like. And that goes without saying. I mean, beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah. And that,
somebody
that,
you
that,
think
that,
is hot may that, not be to somebody else, you know.
Exactly.
And somebody that I think is hot may not be. I mean, so somebody that we don't think is particularly very attractive, such as maybe Lita, for example. Some people really like Lita. Some people really like Chyna.
Yeah, she sold a lot of Playboys.
To each their own, right?
That's right. And I'm a very big April Hunter fan.
April Hunter will be in the tournament,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
So, should be very interesting. We got Wendi Richter, another name from the past in the tournament. So,
yep.
So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be interesting. We got the brackets being developed right now by our good friend, the Wrestling Jackal. And within a couple weeks here, we should start the tournament. We're going to find out who the fans think is the hottest diva in the history of pro wrestling. So I'm looking forward to this. It should be really interesting.
Yeah.
So look forward to that. We'll talk about that more as it comes up. A couple other tidbits here I want to mention. The second season of TNA's British Boot Camp was announced this past week. TNA And I don't really have a problem with that, Frank D. It's only that they've been basically cutting the budget. They let a lot of talent go, and yet they have time to produce another TV show.
Well, you know, it might be cheaper for them to do it over there. They might have an independent company that's doing it for them as well.
True.
They could use, you know, and it's like, okay, you hear about this and you see TNA going to do, you know, this show, but then you hear about, well, we can't do Tough Enough here. And I'm like, as you and I were talking offline, if you already have, as Triple H says, state-of-the-art equipment down there at the Performance Center, why couldn't you just already take a camera crew that's already there and just shoot, you know, these guys working out in the ring, and you already got DeMont down there and all these other people? What's the big deal? I mean, how much money is that really costing for you to have a camera crew down there and shooting this stuff? I can understand them saying, oh, well, we're going to, you know, Legends House, we're going to hold off on that right now because, hey, that's travel. That's paying for food. That's money to you know, rent the house out that they're going to be using. I understand that. But Tough Enough, you already have the ring set up. You got the guys down there that's already under contract to you. And why not? What's the big deal? How much money is that really costing? Just like if they were, you know, to put house shows on the network a day or two after they've happened, maybe, you know, every couple of weeks, how much does that really cost?
Or even to show them live, because people could say, I'm going to go to this house show, I might be on WWE Network.
Yeah, but I don't know.
I don't know. But it would be something that would be original, something to see. I don't know. I just think Tough Enough's been played out.
Tough Enough's played out, but especially since didn't go anywhere.
Come up with a new concept. And really, to me, is let's just put these shows on hold, and as we talked about in the last podcast, just deliver the content that fans want to see right now. All you got to do is go to that vault and clean off the videotape and plop it in the player, right?
In a normal world, that's what we would do. But in the WWE's world, we got a list here of 100 things that we need to dub over.
Right, exactly. In fact, we saw some of the pay-per-views show up originally, then they were taken down because they were probably being edited at that time. So
right.
They rushed to get all this content online, so when they launched, it was there. And then once it was up, they said, oh, we got this song we got to take out. We got to dub out this guy's music. We got to take this scene out and cut that out. And then you get what you get in 2014 here. You get a greatly chopped-up wrestling product, and it's no wonder that, as we said before, why people are not clamoring to WWE Network right now.
Well, it's like this, man. I'm sitting here watching a live stream, and I see the Animotion. You know, I hear Animotion playing in the background. It's the ad for Saturday Night's Main Event on the WWE Network. But then I turn around and look at the episodes, and the damn song is gone.
It's gone.
But why would they play the song on the ad? That's a tease. It's to make you think you're getting what you're not going to get.
Bait and switch.
Exactly. Oh, hey, maybe they have it on here. But oh, listen, I just heard Animotion. I can't wait to watch Saturday Night's Main Event now. If you go on there, it's a damn cheesy song they have for the main event.
But you can see it uncut on YouTube.
I can see it uncut on YouTube. There you go.
There you go. And that's something they're going to have to address if they want new subscribers, A, and B, the current subscribers to stay with the network in the future.
See, here's the deal. They, being WWE, are so big, they're not listening to the fan base.
No.
That's nope. The problem. They did this survey. I have asked a lot of people that I know that have the network, have you taken part in the survey? They said no. So whatever they got this 90% approval from, I don't know. They probably got it out of their ass, to be honest with you. Because I have not taken part in this. I know you haven't. So
I haven't got one. Well, I'll take that back. I haven't gotten a survey anything with WWE Network. I've gotten surveys in the past, a while ago. I haven't got anything recently, and I've never received anything from the WWE Network.
Well, I get the WWE Network surveys. They ask me about, you know, why, if I were to subscribe, resubscribe, what would be the reason why I wouldn't, stuff like that. But as far as the issues at hand, they need to really listen to the fan base and understand. We want the content, and we don't want it, you know, we want it unedited. like you promised. Everything they said they were going to do, see, they haven't done. And that's the reason why they're having issues. When they correct those situations, they won't have a problem.
Right. Like we said before, we both think they're going to succeed with this network because there's just too many wrestling fans that clamor for this old material. And if they get it worked out, they'll win. They'll get the subscribers they need.
Right. And they have to. It's their bread and butter for the next 10, 20 years. They have to make it work.
Right. Yep. As you said, you're telling me offline, is they've alienated a lot of their pay-per-view distributors now.
Yep.
By going to this network. They've basically spit in their face and said, we're going to do it our own way now.
Yep.
Well, if it doesn't work, good luck going back to them guys right now, right? So.
And Vince is never going to grovel back to nobody.
No. No, I mean, I was telling you, I remember Vince McMahon thought he could do another season of XFL.
Right.
And what a major flop that was. So that ego of Vince McMahon.
Yep.
He's never going to say the WWE Network's a failure. And to be honest with you, Frank, I hope it's not a failure. I hope they can deliver the content they have, because what they have is most of the wrestling history at their fingertips. Hopefully they put it in a format that fans can enjoy. And a lot of the things that we talk about that fans have no idea what we're talking about, they can go back and actually check it out on the network. You know, if we say a 1997 Great American Bash, they can go back and really enjoy it as it was that aired in 1997. So.
Oh, God. As we're doing this podcast right now, I just checked out Gerwick.net, and I have some unfortunate news to report. Next week, the rapper Flo Rida will be appearing on Raw.
Oh, man. You just ruined my day, Frank.
My God. You know, I listen to rap music. I listen to it. I have to admit, I listen to everything. But this guy is not at the top of my list.
So breaking news here at Gerwick.net on the Gerwick Report podcast.
Yeah, this really sucks. I guess that's another Raw, just like the one with Kevin Hart, I'll skip.
Oh, jeez. And I will say here, I did watch the newest episode of Ring of Honor, and as we said in the last podcast, they're kind of in a holding pattern. They showed Global Wars matches with New Japan, the joint venture they did together. I did see AJ Styles and Carl Anderson in a tag match with the Bullet Club out there. I saw Jushin Thunder Liger in a tag match with Tanahashi. I saw a great match with the Young Bucks in a three-way against the Timekeepers and the Hooligans for the IWGP Junior Tag Team titles. Frank, this was a match where not only were they chanting, "This is awesome," during the match, after the match, they were chanting, "That was awesome."
Wow.
And we've said this before with the ROH, you know, being in Nashville for the first pay-per-view. They really should have ran one of these pay-per-views, in Toronto for the international show, or, you know, getting back in New York with their rabid TNA fans. Because when you watch a show like that and the fans are just going berserk, that's when you can get really into that wrestling product.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and chanting, "This is awesome." I mean, it's so cliche now to do that. It's just the thing to do. But you have a really good moment. It feels good to say it.
Yeah.
And it's not like, you know, watching the Big Show go over the ropes and you say, "This is awesome," or something like that. But you can still
One thing we could say about international talent, you know, in terms of American television, they translate very well to Ring of Honor because they work the Ring of Honor style, the strong style. Fans really appreciate the New Japan wrestlers, which is refreshing to see on a show like Ring of Honor. In fact, when I was watching the show, Frank, they were actually chanting New Japan, New Japan. So that
a lot
was,
of it's just, you know, like you said, it's a respect thing.
It's respect.
I mean,
right.
It's not sports entertainment. It's professional wrestling.
No.
And that's where the professional wrestling fans are. The professional wrestling fans used to be at TNA in the early days.
Right.
But since TNA has shifted more to a sports entertainment WWE version 2, or just a really bad imitation of WWE, they're not there anymore. TNA feels that, hey, you know, we got the six sides back. Maybe this will draw people in and we can do that. Well, you know, if TNA really wants to start impressing me, so Rob won't call them the dead brand anymore, do two things. Less talk, more action. And also,
right.
you need to get a deeper roster than what you have.
I totally agree with you. And fans, if you're tired of sports entertainment, go check out ROH. I know a lot of the fans out there probably don't have access to Ring of Honor, and I, I'm glad now I at least have a chance to watch it on one of my local stations. You can go with ROH Wrestling. I believe there's a subscription service where you can get the episode during the week before it even airs in syndication. So if you're tired of the same old stuff on TNA and WWE, and I agree, a lot of the same content on both shows, you know, check out Ring of Honor. It really is professional wrestling.
Yep.
It feels like professional wrestling. It doesn't feel like sports entertainment. So
it's got a couple of just a couple of problems there with the way their product looks. But if they get over that and they have some, you know, engaging storylines that go along with their matches, they'll be on top.
And for one thing I will say, I'm watching the show this week. It was basically a best of show where the Global Wars, where you could watch it on demand at ROHWrestling.com. But they had AJ Styles on the show where he wrestled with Carl Anderson, the Bullet Club. They were really hyping that AJ Styles is returning to Ring of Honor on August 15th in New York, and they were definitely playing up that AJ Styles wants a crack at the ROH Heavyweight Championship.
Right.
So I don't know exactly when it's going to be, if it's going to be the next pay-per-view, if they wait till the fall and do it, but I'd love to see...
I'd do it right there. I'd do the pay-per-view right there at that show. That's what I would do in New York. Yep.
Yep. AJ Styles in the main event, challenge for the ROH Championship. That'd be awesome.
And I think
would be awesome.
That would be, yeah. And I think they could probably get clearance through In Demand for that, too.
Yeah. Maybe that will be the next main event for the next pay-per-view.
And if they did that, it would be an idea that I came up with weeks ago.
Yeah. So, as I said, this week on ROH Television, we're hyping AJ Styles, who's currently in New Japan, coming back to America and wanting a crack at the ROH Championship. So, you know, we'll see where they go. But that would definitely be something that would pique my interest for sure. For pay-per-view purposes.
Yep.
Well, Frank, we heard from our good friend Ravon Adamson, giving us our weekly shout-outs, and he's got two questions for us this week as usual. Question number one is, what happens if a wrestler violates his or her 90-day no-compete clause? We were talking about examples that we thought of, and of course the most recent one was Matt Sydal. Evan Bourne, I think, was scheduled to be a part of that Ring of Honor pay-per-view that you saw. He was in his 90-day cycle. They tried to get clearance from WWE. They said no. And essentially what it comes down to, Frank, is if you violate it, if you go to another competitor's pay-per-view or TV show, basically you forfeit your 90-day severance pay. And some people, I believe, wasn't it Raven that actually said, heck with it, I'm going to WCW at one time? Or was it back to ECW? I remember he just said, I don't care about the 90-day cycle. I'm just going to go to work where I want to go work. So, but what it comes down to is if you work during the 90-day cycle at the end, you basically just forfeit your severance pay.
Yeah, I think they pay you, what is it, I think it might be the downside or something like that, is what you get. So, yeah, I pretty much believe that's what it is. That's all it is, just your 90 days. That they don't want you... It's to pay you, but it's also to cool you down. So you can't go anywhere else and make a deal. It's kind of like, you know, say back in the day, a guy would be jumping from, you know, people say that Bret Hart, for instance, let's use him as an example. Bret Hart got screwed over in Montreal, and people say, well, why did WCW keep him off TV for 6 months? Well, they did. The situation was, if I believe it correctly,
six months.
Well, Michael Hayes said 6 months on the on demand on the Legends of Wrestling.
Well, it felt like 6 months after Montreal.
Yeah, so he said, well, why did you keep him off TV for 6 months? Well, actually, they brought him in December before Starrcade. But I believe it's because Bret had a no-compete in his contract. Even though Bret had creative control, he probably decided no-compete in his contract and realized, I want to get this last WWF money. Before heading over to, you know, WCW. Same thing, I think, if WCW had to release a guy, I believe that the same rules might have applied, where they could go over to WWF until this contract ran out. You know, you sign a complete... I don't like the no-compete clause because the guy leaves the whip and goes out there somewhere else. Well, by that time, nobody's talking anymore. You know, you strike while the iron's hot. If a guy got released... And he shows up in TNA the next, you know, if they had a situation where TNA had the availability to be live every week, Steve. If a guy gets released from WWE and they're pissed off, we make a deal right there with Delusional Dixie. We'll head right on down to Impact, and I'm going to speak my mind about how it was treated over at the WWE.
It's an outdated clause. It was really to prevent WWE talent to jump to WCW the same night. That's what we saw with what Rick Rude, the famous one, where he's on a recorded Raw show and
that's
live.
They really took emphasis on this thing too after that.
He was on a live Nitro without the beard.
Yep.
Or he cut the mustache off or whatever. What it really was to protect WWF from guys jumping to WCW or even ECW at the time because they had some television as well. Yep. It's an outdated clause because obviously TNA doesn't have live weekly television. In fact, we just saw TNA record, 7 episodes in a row at their last set of New York City tapings. So I think WWE's been a little more lax on the 90 days. A lot of guys are allowed to go wrestle independently, which is what they should allow them to do, because a lot of these guys being released are guys who need to continue to work. And unfortunately, a lot of times you see at the end of a WWE run, if somebody wasn't used very much, they're basically sitting at home, and then they decide, well, we don't really want you anymore, you're gone. Let's just say Curt Hawkins, for example. He wasn't being used very much. They kick him out. Okay, he goes on the indie circuit, he wants to start working, so you let him start at least doing independent shows. And I think as long as if a promotion doesn't have television or pay-per-view, you're allowed to go on the indie circuit and start wrestling. But if they are on television, traditional television, TV, you're not allowed to go to that competitor. If they're on pay-per-view, just bad timing for Matt Sydal, and that ROH was finally getting on a real traditional pay-per-view stream there with DirecTV and cable satellite, that he lost that opportunity to go to ROH. Of course, he'll eventually go to ROH when his 90 days are up, but it's just an outdated clause. It was to protect WWE from them jumping ship to WCW or ECW. And as I said, I think Raven's the classic example. I remember him. I don't care. I'm gonna go to the competitor. I don't care about the 90 days. You know, screw that.
Yeah, I think he did that before he went to TNA. When he got released from WWE.
That's what it was, then.
Yeah, he went over to TNA, and when he did that. When he showed up down there at NWA TNA down in Nashville, it was a big deal.
Right.
Because this company had just came up, and it was a huge moment when Raven showed up there.
Sure. And that was the reason they didn't want that to happen, is the 90-day clause. But as I said, since ROH is basically in a holding phase to their next big show, and TNA is not a weekly live television show, they really have nothing to worry about with those 90-day clauses anymore. And then his second question from Ravon is, do you think if Paul Heyman would have went to TNA back in 2010 and stayed, how do you think the company would have been in terms of ratings and even pay-per-view business? Well, Frank, this was the model that Paul Heyman came up with when he was approached about becoming the head booker of TNA, that you let a lot of the older guys go, the bigger names go, guys that are not drawing, bringing in money. You basically start over to a larger degree. You don't worry about ratings for a while. You start developing new stars, and you kind of go in that direction since your product had been played out. 2010 was – they were a dead brand in 2010, Frank, to a larger degree. So you kind of hit that reset button with Paul Heyman, a guy who's very creative and can make new stars. How do I think they would have done in 2014 if they would have hired Paul Heyman in 2010? I think they'd be better off, Frank. I can't guarantee they would be a viable contender to WWE, but I definitely think the roster would be better. I think it'd be a better product. It'd be a stronger wrestling product than more sports entertainment. And I think they'd be in a better boat than they are today.
See, here's why I look at the situation. I look at, Paul Heyman is a very charismatic and very creative guy. We already know that. But ECW in its heyday only went so far. It only reached so many people. It only got so big. I mean, there were people back in the day saying that ECW was number 2 and WCW was number 3. That was never the case to me. WCW was a bigger company, had a bigger budget. It was on Turner Networks. and I don't see how they – it's just – you know what I'm saying? It's not on the same level.
Well, you probably pointed out the key. If they hire Paul Heyman and they give him somewhat of a budget, maybe he could have been successful. If they don't give him much of a budget, well, he's probably in the same boat he is today.
Here's a problem that would have happened and why it wouldn't have worked. You got to remember the landscape of TNA back in 2010. 2010, the landscape was Vince Russo, Eric Bischoff, it was Hogan, it was Jeff Jarrett, okay, it was Ric Flair.
Well, that's why he wanted to clean house.
Yeah, you want to clean house, but you're not going to clean house with Jeff Jarrett. You're not going to clean house with Dixie Carter. At the end of the day, it was Dixie Carter's final decision on what happens. So I think Paul Heyman was looking for an exclusive thing of let him run everything.
Right.
And that wasn't going to happen. They weren't going to
do that. Dixie didn't want to give up the power.
Dixie wasn't going to give up the power because Dixie knows it all. Okay, so they left Russo there in charge, and you see how that went.
Although now Dixie doesn't have the purse.
Dixie doesn't have the purse.
Janice Carter has the purse.
But she still has the power.
If you don't have the purse, what power do you really have?
Well, Dixie has the power to fire people.
True.
That's what I mean.
And she has.
She has power to fire people, let people go. Or either that, or her mother is doing it.
Or you could say, in her case, she could say, well, you know, I'd like to keep AJ, but I just mommy won't give me the money.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. So either way it goes, with TNA's viewership was a lot stronger than it was in back in 2010 as opposed to now. I'll agree with that. Their viewership was way up there. They had more fans back then. But and I think, you know, to a large degree that the roster was a lot better back then too.
Yes.
But
today's roster in 2014.
It's an embarrassment.
TNA. It is embarrassing. It looks like an indie promotion.
Yeah, it does.
With television.
Yeah, it's bad. But
it's
in
really
2010,
bad.
If Paul Heyman had went over there, just the stigma of TNA. I don't even think Heyman could have done anything with that.
That's true. That TNA stigma is
it
really stinks.
Yeah, it's just a bad, it's just an odor. It's a foul odor that you can take a million showers and you can't get it off of you.
Yeah, it's that stink that the guys from TNA don't go to WWE because of that stink, that stench.
Exactly.
And
they're saying, oh, well, Kurt Angle, you know, he'll come. Kurt Angle's best matches are behind him.
Yep.
Okay, you think WWE is going to take Kurt Angle now? I mean, they might. I mean, they got Ric Flair out there. But, you know, here's a guy in Angle who has a bad neck, who is a lot older now, who has a bad knee.
You know, Frank, I saw I think he was, what, on Jim Ross's podcast?
Yeah.
And he's talking that, you know, he hasn't signed a new deal because he's keeping his options open. And if the other company calls, would definitely listen, and that's what you should say, and that's great. But how does that look for TNA? You know, one of your most prominent stars says, I might stay, or if Vince calls, I'll probably go back to Vince.
It really shouldn't be as a surprise to anybody.
No.
I think TNA realized this, and they're making other plans looking beyond Kurt Angle.
You know, just to interject something right here, we're talking about 2010. You know what the average rating for TNA in 2010?
What was that?
1.06.
Huh.
And that's the rating of the show last week was a 1.06.
Huh.
So, to me, if Paul Heyman comes in, and as you said, as Frank said, they have the better 2010 roster. Again, a lot of it is dependent on, do you get rid of the dead weight? Do you get rid of Ric Flair? Do you get rid of Hulk Hogan? Do you get rid of Eric Bischoff? And if they stay, how much you can do is very limited. If they clean house, and of course, the smart thing about Paul Heyman is he knows if he goes to TNA and you got Hogan and you got Bischoff and you got Jeff Jarrett, et cetera, it won't work because they're not going to give you the power you need to make it work. So by him saying, forget that, I'm not getting into that mess. If I don't get full control of the company, forget it. To me, that might have been TNA's last ditch effort to really save the company, was getting Paul Heyman in 2010. They didn't go that direction. You said it was Dixie's final call. She decided she didn't want to give up the authority to Paul Heyman. And, you know, you are where you are in 2014.
Exactly. They are where they are because of the decisions that were made by management.
And
Paul Heyman couldn't even say that.
Let me say, I don't necessarily agree that Paul Heyman would have saved the company, because I agree with Frank, too. 2010, the stench of that company was very, very potent, very strong.
Yep.
But I think he could have made an improvement. I think the ratings would have went up. I think he would have created some new stars. But in the final equation, do I think he could have made TNA as competitive as WWE? Very unlikely.
I don't think the ratings would have went up at all. Because he might have made new stars. I'll give him that. But the ratings would never have done anything because nobody knew the damn show was on. You got
if you make new stars, then who makes the stars is the fans, right?
Well, where were the fans? that's the point. Where were the fans? There was you had the most recognizable face in wrestling at your company. And he couldn't draw nothing. And a lot of that honestly, had to do with age. But a lot of that had to do with personal problems that he was going through.
You know, we were talking before we did this podcast, and you made a good point. What we were saying right there, nobody knew about TNA in 2010. You know, here we are in July, middle of July, 2014, and there's been no update really with the TNA television situation. And you were saying, well, they're going to stay with Spike. They're going to be on another season. And I agree. I don't see any reason for them not to be a part of the Spike fall lineup. But why haven't they announced it yet? Where's the press release that says Spike TV is renewing the contract of Impact Wrestling, our highest rated show or one of our highest rated shows? And we're happy that they'll be a part of our fall TV lineup. And then, adversely, TNA saying we're glad to continue our relationship with Spike TV. Here we are in the middle of July, and what is the holdup here? You would think you'd want to put that press release out to tout that. Hey, yeah, we continue to work together, and we're going to be part of the fall schedule. And you know, Frank, you feel pretty confident they're going to stay, but I know a lot of the boys are like, hey, you know, there's no guarantee until the contracts are signed. I mean, if TNA goes dark, I mean, there's a whole different ballgame altogether for the future of the company. So, you know, you were saying that nobody knows about TNA. This is their chance. If they're going to renew their contract for the fall, put out the press releases, tout it, run promos on Spike TV that says, this fall, another great season of Impact Wrestling is coming to Spike TV, etc. And as of middle of July, Frank, we've heard absolutely nothing.
Well, you know, here's the thing with that, Steve. Spike TV doesn't really do commercials for TNA.
No.
I can't say that I've ever really seen one.
No.
Other than when I'm watching Impact or if Impact is going to be coming on. And I admit, I don't watch Impact. I haven't watched it for quite some time. So I don't know what the deal is with that.
Nobody does, because when I look for somebody to cover Impact Wrestling at Gerwig.net, no takers.
Yeah.
And I'm still in that contest. We were going to throw it out for if anybody finds a TNA wrestling fan with a TNA t-shirt, I haven't gotten any pictures yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, to sum it up with Ravon, I think he would have done better with the product if he's allowed to clear houses. There's a lot of variables that go into it. It's kind of like, you know, where do you think WCW would have went if it were survived? Well, there's a lot of caveats that go along with that. You know, television, who takes over, etc. If TNA gives Paul Heyman full power with some money to do something with it and to actually go out and put billboards on streets to let people know that Impact Wrestling is actually on television, I think they could have done better. They could be in a better situation than they are today. Could they be profitable in 2014? Probably pretty unlikely with the lack of revenue streams they currently have. And that's why I think they maybe missed the boat with that TNA on-demand service. That could have made them some money.
Well, I was just going to say right now with the on-demand service,
Right.
I remember now what the price was that I paid for that, because I was actually looking through my thing here. The price for the TNA on-demand service, which gave you every pay-per-view and every DVD they ever put out, it was only $3.95 a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. $3.95 a month, and you had access to all TNA pay-per-views and DVDs.
And
wow.
Yeah, and because of low promotion, it didn't work. But wow. $3.95, and you had everything.
Yeah, I remember when you were telling me $9.90, I was thinking $9.99. I was like, I think it was less than. I remember you telling me that. I was like, maybe it was $5.99, but I was maybe mixing up with the old WWE on-demand service they used to have.
And at the time, that was, I remember, because I got you to subscribe to that WWE Classic
on-demand.
The WWE Classics on the computer.
Right.
And that was $3.95 a month. So.
$3.95 a month.
Yeah.
Can you imagine today if you could get all that access for $3.95 a month? Now, of course, the problem would be with currently today is it's only available through the website. But if you get other platforms.
Well, they had a Roku. Apparently they had a Roku.
Well, wow. That's too bad that didn't work out.
And I'm reading here on there, and this is from July 12th of 2012. It says here, one of the things they had on here, it says, until July 31st, enjoy any of our archived video on demand videos for only 50 cents a piece.
Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. So that might be something they may want to consider relaunching.
And maybe they will. We don't know. I mean, it says transitional phase. Could mean they're phasing the service out, or, you know, maybe they're looking to upgrade it. But
you know, and the thing about it, too, I mean, to cut you off, but
yeah.
Why not have a launch of service like that where you can have it as part of an app like the WWE Network, and maybe TNA can put their pay-per-views that they do up there for $9.99 or something like that.
Does TNA even have an app?
Do they have an app? I'm not sure. Let me, as we're talking, I'm going to go to the Google Play Store and see if TNA has an app.
Because if they do, they definitely don't hype it.
Well, WWE
they don't hype their house shows. They didn't hype their on-demand service. If they have an app, they're definitely not hyping it. So I don't know.
Jeff Hardy has an app here.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, Jeff
but
Hardy
Impact has. Wrestling does not.
Impact Wrestling does not, but Jeff Hardy has one, and it looks like an exercise app.
In 2014, a company that's been around for 12 years does not have an app.
Nope.
Okay. There you go. Yeah, they could have put all that on-demand content on their app.
Yep.
But since they don't have an app, I guess you can't. So.
Right.
Too bad.
Yep.
Epic fail. Well, I think that's going to be our podcast for today. I want to remind everybody, if you want to email Frank D and I with topics and suggestions and questions, you can email us direct at GerwickReport@Gerwick.net. Additionally, we're on Stitcher. We're on Spreaker. Tune in. You can stream our shows on those, or our podcasts on those sites or those apps. Speaking of apps, all of them have apps. And you can also download our previous podcast on iTunes, and of course, if you don't want to do any of those, just follow along at Gerwick.net, GERWECK.net, Gerwick at Twitter, Steve Gerwick, and the Gerwick Report is also on Twitter, as is the real Frank D, not the fake Frank D, the real Frank D.
Right, and there's been some fake ones in the past.
Yeah, so we'll make that clear, real Frank D-E-E on Twitter.
Right.
So definitely check that out. Of course, I'm on Facebook, Steve Gerwick and Gerwick.net. Like our page on Facebook. And as always, Frank, I enjoyed doing this podcast with you today. Looking forward to the next edition.
Absolutely, man. And stay tuned for me and the Jackal. We'll get back up there doing one of these wrestling reviews. Just, got to pick a day to do it. But we'll get it done.